Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
What's up?
Wake up, Hollywood. I almost said welcome, Hollywood.
Welcome, Hollywood.
Well, how are you? I was going to say
good.
Welcome, Eddie Pence.
Welcome. Welcome, everybody.
Welcome,
everybody.
How you been, dude?
Good.
How were your shows last weekend?
Fun.
Was it Tucson?
Carolina. So Carolina Comedy Club.
Was it cold?
Myrtle Beach. It was balls cold.
Yeah, dude. I think it must have been like 30 degrees.
It was 18 at night.
Oh, my God.
It snowed in Myrtle Beach.
That is crazy. Yeah, the South just got like...
Hammered. It was like 28 during the day. I've never seen it that cold there before in my life.
Were people out and about?
No.
Because
I was supposed to do four shows. The show on Wednesday or Thursday night got canceled because that was the night of it was ice everywhere.
Right.
And that area of the country is not prepared for icy roads. There's no like snow plows or sand trucks for the roads. So they just canceled the show.
Wait, how do they not have snow plows? I thought every county has those.
Not in the South. I mean, it never snows there.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, that's right.
It'd be a waste of money
That's so true.
So they're just not... It was like literally a quarter inch of snow on the ground, and the whole place shut down.
That's crazy.
So you're just
kicking it in your hotel room?
No, my parents live there, so I was with my folks.
Nice.
I was at my folks' place. And then Friday we had one show when like 15 people showed up, which was still fun. And then Saturday we were supposed to have two shows, but they just combined it into one show.
Oh, that's cool. Did you get the same amount of time?
Yeah, it was just like 45 minutes or an hour or whatever. But we had like 50 people out that night.
I'm impressed.
That's fun.
You know, I've been
not
dying to talk to you.
Well, yeah,
I mean, that's tough though because weather is always a factor. I mean,
so cold, and it's Myrtle Beach is a tourist town anyway, so it's hard to get people out in the off season anyway because there's no one there.
Right, because it's not spring break.
Yeah,
that's like
from like May
season.
May to August. Everything's sold out. It's like every show is sold out, but like September to March, it's.
So why did you book it during the winter?
Just because I knew I was going to be back to see my folks around the holidays. And
that makes sense.
I just like, I might as well work while I'm home.
Yeah, that's, you know, I'm like that too. I kind of like combine trips, make it work and business and pleasure. That way it's like you get two bangs for the
You get paid and then you get to get out of the house. It gives you a reason to get out of the house.
Yep. And see some friends, go see some sights. Yeah,
that's cool. It's just cold.
I was dying to talk to you last week because I went and saw Chappelle and Mayer for New Year's Eve. And you always tell me, you're like, music and comedy doesn't work. And I'm like, I can't wait to tell Eddie, music and comedy worked, man. It was dope.
Well, it's Chappelle.
Well, Chappelle, I got to tell you.
Had it been just some comic,
yeah,
would not have worked.
Yes, that's true. Maybe.
No, would not have worked.
You know,
if it had
awesome?
Been Mayer and then just some Joe Schmo comic, no. Would not have worked.
Chappelle was awesome.
It's Chappelle.
Have you seen him live?
Yeah.
He's one of the best.
I did a show at the Dime on Fairfax, I don't know, 8-9 months ago. It's like the size of this room.
And
he dropped in.
How much time did he do?
He did like an hour.
So I saw Chappelle and Mayer do this same kind of thing at the Hotel Cafe.
Yeah.
Impromptu. I actually asked Chappelle for a ticket to the show because I didn't know it was Chappelle at the moment because it was just a Mayer, you know, secret show. And I didn't have a ticket. And I was like, hey, man, do you have an extra ticket? And I was like, oh, shit, it's Dave Chappelle. He's like, sorry, man. And he walks in. And then I ended up getting in. And then he ends up doing 45 minutes.
Yeah.
He just, like, did this whole bit. And it was cool because some of the jokes they actually did for the New Year's Eve thing, too.
Oh, on his Netflix special?
No, it wasn't. He did some of the jokes from the Netflix special, but he did some of more of the jokes that he did at the Hotel Cafe with Mayer.
Okay.
And then did them again. But he did do some of the jokes from the Netflix. I watched one of them.
No, I haven't watched them yet.
They're good. I mean, he is. I think he's one of the most important comics of our time.
He's pretty prolific. I know he's getting a lot of backlash for something he did on the special.
Well, he's getting a little political, but I mean, he's great. I mean, the things that he says and what he talks about and what he puts like a spotlight on, and then like he'll even tell something serious that's like a socially conscious moment, and he says it in the right way to bring attention to it, but then also spins it in a way that comes right back to, you know, being funny. I mean, he really is a significant artist. Like, I've always been a fan of him. Before even Chappelle's show, I used to see him in all, like, Robin Hood Men in Tights and all of the stand-up that he did before he was really big on the Chappelle show, and I've always been a fan. But I'd only seen him maybe twice live, and, man, he's just legit. He's Jedi, for sure. So, which brings me to comedy and music, Eddie. We're going to have to do something.
Doesn't work.
We're going to have to do something.
Doesn't work.
Dude.
If I was Chappelle, it would work.
You know what? It's Ebony and Ivory. I'm like Chocolate Brown, Chocolate
work.
Thunder. You're white.
Work.
I mean, it can work. I'm telling you. We'll just like, we'll bring worlds together.
It doesn't work. We'll do it at the House of Blues.
Well, when it comes back. But anyways.
It's never
coming
back.
I think our special guest has arrived. I'm rushing it. I'm rushing to it, Eddie.
Get him here.
Because I'm so excited. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Chris Pierce. My studio audience loves you, man. How are you, Chris?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Dude, I've been so excited for this interview because, A, Eddie, you don't know this. Chris, I don't even think you know this. Maybe you do. But Chris is one of the reasons I wanted to be in a band.
Oh, man.
And, you know, the band that I remember when I was in music school and I knew that I was like, oh, man, it'd be kind of cool to be in a band. And I went to Molly Malone's. And I saw this man play in a band called The Best of Simple.
Oh, man.
And, man, they were jamming. But Chris was far beyond the band that he was playing with. And, man, I just remember hearing this guy sing. And I'm like, I have not seen an L.A. band sound like this. This cat is legit. And you still are just the, like, a cut above every musician that I've known for years. And you've got an interesting, amazing story. You've done a lot of cool things. Let's just jump right into it.
Man,
we're going way back, Eddie. You ready for this?
Man, that must have been 20 years ago.
Oh, man, it was 2002.
Okay, close.
2000, yeah, maybe wow. 2001. Yeah. Maybe
wow.
Even 2001.
Yeah.
And I remember, you know, I remember the track that did it for me. And, Eddie, you're going to appreciate this. The track was called Everybody Loves the Ice Cream Man. And I bought a CD.
Woo.
And I had all these guys sign it. That's how. And I don't do that. I don't do that unless it's a band I love. And I had all you guys sign it. And I talked to you for like 3 minutes. And I was like, man, that guy was so cool. And he was so bitching. And I listened to the track. And the track sounds so good. It was like a five song EP.
Yep.
But I remember I just like had that song on repeat because it's such a badass song.
Man. Thank you, man. You know, it's great to be here, man, and it's so funny you bring that up. You keep bringing things up that, you know, I just stopped in Molly Malone's like 2 days ago after like 2 years.
Wow.
And I decided I'm going to do some shows there next
That's
month.
Awesome.
Which we'll talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude,
yeah.
You've been doing the solo singer-songwriter thing. You've got a band, too.
Yeah.
But we're going to go way back. Kids Incorporated.
Oh,
man. Oh! Do you remember the show?
Oh, I remember the show.
So Chris was on Kids Incorporated. I want to jump way back then because I assume that this is how you got into the arts. But you can even go back further. What got you into music? What got you into singing?
Well, man, I mean, music, I learned how to spell my name by singing a song when I was, just had started walking. And my mother taught me a song that was my name, so I could start to learn how to spell. So it goes back that far.
That's
for me.
That's dope.
And then I went to in my neighborhood they were doing busing at the time, and so my parents sent me to a private school, Episcopalian school, and I started in the choir there when I was probably five. But when I was eight, I saw an ad in the L.A. Times in the classified section. and it was an ad for a play called Tom Sawyer at the Barnsdale Theater. And I told my folks at 8, I said, I want to go audition for this. And it was like community theater kind of
thing. Wow.
And so they took me down, I auditioned for it. And that was 2 years before the Kids Incorporated thing. I did the production of Tom Sawyer. It was like a Huckleberry Finn kind of show.
Were you Huckleberry Finn?
No, I was this kid. I don't even know what his name was, but I got to sing a gospel number,
which was
cool, and wear suspenders and knee highs, you know.
Nice.
And then a year after that, when I was 9, I got hired my first professional gig to play at the Ice House in Pasadena.
That Eddie plays there all the time?
Yeah, we were talking about that before the show.
Yeah, man. And they hired me to sing Isn't She Lovely by Stevie Wonder for all the mothers on Mother's Day.
That's awesome.
Yeah, man. And so, you know, it was kind of always been there for me. You know, the Kids Incorporated thing, I went and auditioned in the 5th grade when I was around 10.
Was it the first season or second season? Do you remember?
I want to say it was one of the first seasons. It was...
Like, the reason I asked, did you see it on TV and then it made you want to, like, audition for it? Or did you just audition for it because you heard about it?
No, I think I had gotten a little... an agent by then. Like, an acting, singing agent. And I think they sent me out for it. But it was 1985, so it must have been pretty early on.
That show was the shit, man.
Man, yeah, I mean...
It was the shit.
Yeah, when I was on it, you know, Fergie was on it, Stacey Ferguson, and Martika, and Vasan Patterson, and Mario Lopez was on it as a dancer. I mean,
dude.
It was, you know...
That's A.C. Slater, man.
Yeah, man. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, man. So that's kind of where it all got going, you know, around that time.
And you grew up in Claremont, I think? Where did you grow up?
Yeah, born in Pasadena, and then we moved to Claremont around that time.
Wait, what was the church that you started singing in? Do you remember?
That was St. Mark's Episcopal Church.
It
was
the reason I say that, because I started singing at the age of 5 at All Saints Episcopal Church.
Oh, wow.
So okay. I wanted to see if it was this. I would be like, man, this is trippy.
All Saints. Okay.
So you finished Kids Incorporated. Yeah. You go? Did you go to an art school or anything like that?
No, I went to, starting 4th grade on, I went to public school in Claremont. And just started getting involved in theater there and bands there, groups there, everything from garage bands to straight up singing and dancing New Edition songs on
stage.
That's dope. You know
that. Wait, so when did you start playing guitar?
around 10 or 11. Oh, my godmother gave me a guitar and I just started strumming. And there were a lot of great people in our community that were teachers and great guitar players. So picked up a few things from people in the community. And
that's awesome.
Yeah, man.
And when did you write your first song?
Oh, I think around 12.
So you knew then.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I was writing about deep stuff, man. I mean, I was 12, man.
You were feeling, feeling the pain of the
first,
world.
The first line of that song is, sometimes I feel no surprises. That's when I see those illusions in my mind.
Wow. Yeah, geez, dude, man. Getting crazy. That's philosophical,
man.
Eddie.
Well, I was an only child, man, you know, so I had a lot of time on my own, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, you were a poet in the making, dude.
I didn't even know it.
That's right. What are you, Dr. Seuss? So you finish high school. Did you do any kind of choirs or anything through high school?
Yeah, not choir, but I did groups and, you know, talent shows. And when I was my junior year of high school, I was on the show Big Break, TV show Big Break. It was Natalie Cole hosted it. And my band... my group made it to the finals, and we competed against R. Kelly.
Wow!
In the finals, and at that time it was R. Kelly and MGM, the Mentally Gifted Men, and they won. They won the show, and that kind of got his career going. And then I went to college after that. Yeah.
And did you study music, or did you study? Where'd you go?
I went to USC.
Now, man, we went to the same school, too.
Yeah, man, I got a couple scholarships and did work study and worked my way through jazz studies there from, I don't know, starting in around 92.
That's awesome. Yeah. So who's your teacher? Do you remember your voice teacher?
Michelle Weir and Sean Holt were both, you know, it was the first year of the vocal emphasis in the jazz studies program, so I was one of the first.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Did you take any songwriting classes there?
Not songwriting, but a lot of different, you know, like Shelley was a teacher of mine, and Tom Mason. And,
dude, Shelley Berg's like, Shelley Berg, he's now at Miami.
Yep.
He's, I think he's like the he into music or something like that?
Yeah, yeah.
He is one of the most talented jazz pianists probably in the world.
Yeah.
I still think he's one of my favorites. Like, I put him up there with Herbie. I put him up there with some of the greats, you know, because he was just a badass. He left maybe, I think, 2 years after I graduated.
Man, I ran into him up north in the Bay probably 3 years ago. And he invited me he was playing. He invited me to sit in on a song. And he introduced me and he said, "Man, you know, I haven't seen this guy in over 20 years. He's a great guy, great singer, but he wasn't such a great student."
That's awesome.
Yeah, so that made me sing really good that
night. Yeah, you're like, "I'm going to dig in." You should have whipped out that line from your 12-year-old song.
Exactly, you know? Exactly. And Arturo Sandoval was playing on that song. And, Dean Parks was playing guitar, which it was a killing band.
And did you start a band at USC at all?
You know, not really until after. I was involved in the jazz ensembles there, and then I didn't start playing in coffee houses until probably halfway through, but I did get my first tour when I was still at school with a band called Sonia Dada, and that was 1993, and they had a hit out. It was on the radio, that song, "Lover, Lover, Lover, You Don't Treat Me No Good No More." It was a big hit, I went and replaced one of their singers for a little while on the road. And we were playing big big shows.
Like theaters, arenas.
The biggest one was about 30,000.
Damn, that's crazy.
Chris Isaac was playing, the Terrence Trent D'Arby, and, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, it was like.
So how old were you then?
I was, 93. I would have been, 19, 20, going on 20.
Man.
Yeah.
So you got a taste of the road early.
I got a taste of it. I knew it was something I wanted to do. That was some of the best schooling I could have gotten, was being on a tour bus going through the United States, you know, playing these shows and just kind of feeling that out. And then I immediately after school started playing coffee shops. I started standing in line at Highland Grounds.
Wow. That was a scene, too.
Yeah.
Have you ever done an open mic at Highland Grounds?
No.
Well, Highland Grounds was like the coveted open mic for a long time. And it was a scene. I remember it being a scene.
Yeah, you get there at 5, you'd stand in line, you'd wait to sign up, and then you'd sit there till, you know, 11,
and sometimes
12
you wouldn't
night.
Even get, sometimes
you
wouldn't.
They wouldn't even get called.
There were times, I think I went once or twice. First time I didn't even get to go up. And I was like, this is crazy. And the second time I got there early and did the same thing, it was like ridiculous. So you went through the scene. So you went to Highland Grounds, did an open mic.
Met some cats there that, you know, heard me and were like, "I'm a bass player, I'm a disc player, you know, let's get, you know." And then started playing the Crooked Bar after that, which was underneath the Coconut.
We have
tea.
Such a parallel. That was my first gig.
Crooked
Bar was the first place I ever played.
Yeah, man.
I love that. It was in such a seedy, the Coconut Teaser, right?
Yeah.
But it was in such a seedy bar, but then downstairs with like, it was like this really cool acoustic vibe.
Yeah, it was cool. Remember the booker there, Dawn?
Yeah.
Yeah, she was so sweet. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, man. I don't know how that came to me, but...
That's crazy that it came to you, because I forgot about her, you know?
But yeah, man, and then, you know, the rest is just to play coffee shops for many years until I met Seal and then started doing, you know, kind of a lot of opening gigs for people.
Well, skipped a whole bunch of steps that I love.
All right.
So you started playing at the Crooked Bar, and then you started playing. When did the Best of Simple come about? When did you start, you know, touring with the band?
That came out of the Crooked Bar, Best of Simple.
Wow.
Yeah, I met some guys, you know, through there, and I think I put an ad in the Recycler that I'm looking to start
old
a
school,
band.
Yeah,
the Recycler.
That's right, way back when.
Started the Best of Simple, and the Best of Simple, the name came from a Langston Hughes novel that I really
great
love.
Great name.
And and JT at Genghis Cohen, which was another one of my first gigs, he was booking Molly's, and we kind of made Molly's our Friday night. We're the Molly's Friday night, starting at 10, going till closing band.
Yeah,
for many years, and we played every Friday, and then every New Year's Eve, we were that kind of staple band there.
I remember seeing you at the Temple Bar too, a bunch.
Oh, Temple Bar, sure, yeah.
And I've seen you at Hotel Cafe.
Wow.
Now let's fast forward to the Seal story, because this is, I mean, I think you told me this. I think you were at like a Christmas party or something, right?
It was a party. It wasn't a Christmas party, but it was. I had gotten invited by an old high school friend, and she called me up and she said, "Hey, I'm friends with this director." She lives in, I think it was Brentwood or one of those, you know, Bel Air or Brentwood, right, one right. of those. I think Bel Air, it was Bel Air. And she said, hey, you know, she's having this little party. I was wondering if you, you know, you'd be interested in bringing your guitar and throwing it in your truck and playing a few songs. And I said, cool. And so I threw my guitar in my truck and rolled up there. I start playing for like 15, 20 people. And I'm heads down like this and I'm singing. I lift my head up and Seal had walked in.
Dude.
And the dude's got a big smile on his face. And so I got to talk to him after. And I said, man, I'm a huge fan. And what are you up to? And he goes, getting ready to do a kind of an acoustic tour in Europe. And I said, dude, if you ever, I don't think I said dude, but I said, Seal, if you ever need an opening act, please call me. My backpack's packed and ready. So the next morning, my manager at the time called me up. He said, where were you last night? And I said, man, I was at this party, you know, it was cool, played for free, you know, did the thing. Met Seal, that was really cool. And he goes, I know, they want you to be open for him in Mannheim, Germany in 2 weeks. And I said, let me call you back. And I ran around the block, kind of like, it was like surreal.
Crazy.
And I was like, I need to take a little jog. So I jogged around the block. Came back, I called him back, I said, that would be a yes. And so I ended up doing 4 legs of touring with Seal as his opening act.
That's two
in
incredible.
Europe and two in the U.S. And that opened up a lot of doors.
Right.
You know, I got signed a record deal and got some placements in some TV and film and then left the record deal and then went on my own and open for B.B. King and Al Green. And
there's a great picture, Eddie. I got to tell you about this picture. And I think you posted it on Facebook.
Uh-huh.
You came out, I think it was either you, right after you finished your set and B.B. was starting.
Yeah.
And B.B. King is sitting on a chair and he's like shaking Chris's hand. And you're just bowing to him like, you are the greatest. And it's such a powerful picture because you're such a great artist. Yeah. And he's obviously a legendary artist as well. And you're paying such respect. And you don't see that in a lot of artists. You just don't. Even the greatest artists, when they're opening for another artist, there's ego, there's all kinds of bullshit, you know. And it's one of the best pictures I've ever seen of two great artists just, you know, in a space. And I love that picture. So
Thank you, man.
Glad you talked about
it. Yeah, Mr. King, that experience was one I'll never forget. And he invited me out every night at the end of his set to take a bow with him.
Wow.
And he'd say, I want everybody to buy this young man's CD in the lobby. And you know, I mean, it was love all the way.
Wow.
I mean, it was at every show.
That's incredible. What year was that?
Oh, boy. That would have been 2009.
Wow.
Nine-ish. I think nine and then 10, I think I did some with him. Like, I think I did Nokia with him at the beginning of 2010.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, let's get to you playing a song.
All right.
Because I know our listeners are like, let's hear this guy.
Oh, man.
And I can't wait because I love hearing you play. And I don't say that about a lot of artists, but I love hearing you play. So I'm excited. What are you playing us first?
I'm going to actually start with a tune that I co-wrote for a TV show called This Is Us.
That's another. Let's talk about that for 2 seconds.
All right.
First of all, This Is Us. Eddie, have you ever watched that show?
I have not.
It is definitely, hands down, the best TV
show. I hear everybody talks about it.
It's the best TV show on TV. It is the best TV show. You were actually on the TV show as well.
Yeah, they threw me in there. Yeah.
You were in like a flashback moment of like a 60s band, right?
Yeah.
I saw it. I was like, dude, I didn't know he was going to be on it. That's awesome.
Yeah, man.
It was so dope. It was so awesome.
Cool.
And the song is beautiful. And it's also available on the season, I think, soundtrack or
something.
Yeah,
it's on the set. They actually used 3 versions of the song on the show, which was cool. The one that I played in the scene on is on the soundtrack, and then they use, and that was a bunch of us playing, and then in the studio, and then an actor named Brian Tyree Henry sang it, and he's on the show Atlanta as well. Really dope. He plays Paperboy on Atlanta.
Oh, that's awesome.
He's amazing. And then they used a version that I played and sang, which is the one I'm getting ready to play.
Yeah,
now.
Let's do it. Let's
and
do
then
it.
Another version by a woman named Hannah Miller out of Nashville. So they actually used the song 3 times.
That's amazing.
Really cool. So this is the version that I did that they used on at the beginning of episode. I don't know.
What it was episode. Like it was like the last, second to last, or third to last.
Yeah, 16, 17, like yeah. something like that. It's called "We Can Always Come Back to This." Standing at the station, we don't know what to say. Looking out the window as you're rolling away. If I'm gonna be alone, let it be with you. Mother, don't you cry, it's gonna be all right. Open up your suitcase when you get there tonight. You're not alone. I'm always here with you. Where we go from here, no matter how the cards will fall, I'll pick you up and you'll hold me too. So don't give up on me, I'll never give up on you. Everything's gonna be alright. I know you believe it too. If I'm gonna be alone, oh, let it be.
Charged.
Yes, it was.
Eddie.
It was very deep.
You were feeling it.
I was feeling it.
You cannot walk into a room and see many artists that command that much attention.
Yeah.
Always.
I can see what Seal saw.
Yep.
Oh, thanks, man.
Every time you open your mouth, man, honestly, when you sing, it's just like you really you make people present. It's a real gift.
Right on. Thank you, man. I mean, it's an honor. Every time I get to do it, it's you know, it's a thankfulness that just takes over my spirit. It's a feeling you get when you wake up every morning. It's like, just thank you for giving me another day. Thank you for giving me another song to sing, you know.
What was the inspiration behind that song?
You know, the inspiration behind it was the script. But
did they paint the whole scene, or did they just give you like a couple pages to read?
Well, I got to write it with the main composer for the show, Siddhartha Khosla, and so he called me up, and we had met years ago at South by Southwest. He called me up and he said, "Yo, man, I remember you're a soul singer and a soul writer, and I've got to write the soul song for this tune that takes place in Memphis in the late 1960s." And I thought of you. And so
that's awesome.
So before I hung up, I was already like, you know, putting my shoes on to get in the car to go up and write with him. And then he told me a little bit about the scene, and there were so many parallels with me. With my own story, you know, it was a guy who went with his dad for down south to kind of to tell him a little bit more about his life, and I won't spoil it, but a lot of it, for those of you who haven't seen it, but a lot of it reminded me of my story with my dad before he passed away, which was 18 years ago, and and I was immediately drawn to it. And the mother in the show as well, I was immediately drawn to that story, and having what having the you know, being able to draw my own perspective to what was going on along with Sid's, who works on the show, we just kind of dug deep, and I think in a couple hours we had the song written.
Amazing.
And he sent it in, and they liked it, and that next week we were recording it in the studio, and then the week after that I was in the scene doing that, and 2 weeks after that I was number one on the Billboard Blues charts.
That's, you know, amazing.
It's like boom, 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 boom.
You're like, man, this machine works.
man, yeah.
That's incredible.
So yeah, but yeah, I mean, I always try to find a place in my own experience to draw upon.
Yeah.
Even when it's like, you know, that kind of situation where there is a script, there's a TV show, it's there is something that I have to write about, but it's all comes from experience.
And I love that you were in the show for that too, because your sound is so, like, it's such a 60s Memphis, you know, Southern sound. Mm-hmm. And I think the scene is in Memphis, isn't it? In
it
Memphis?
Is. It is, yeah.
And when I saw you in it, I was like, man, that couldn't have worked out more perfectly. You know what I mean?
Yeah, man, the trip is, I had just gotten back from Muscle Shoals doing a soul record of 60 soul tunes with the Swampers, with all the surviving members that are around, like Jimmy Johnson and David Hood and Spooner Oldham and Harvey Thompson and Charlie Rose. The Horns all came in. The Shoals sisters came in. Even Donna Jean Godshaw came in from the dead to sing a song.
That's amazing.
So I had just been down in the South working on this record before I got that call. So it couldn't have come at a more perfect.
And how did that come about?
That was, I mentioned Sonia Dada earlier, who was my first touring experience. The guitar player from that band over the years has kind of been a godfather to me. He hired me for a bunch of stuff during college to help me get through school. He's kind of always been a guy that's looked out after me.
Right.
He called me up a few years back, and he said, "Chris, have you seen this Muscle Shoals documentary?" And I said, "Yeah, man, that's like the stuff I grew up on." And he goes, "I think I can get a hold of those guys through another friend." And he said, "Would you be into going down there and doing like three songs?"
You're like, "Yes,
and
yes,
I said,
and
yes."
Yes.
So we flew down to Nashville and drove down there. I met all the cats. We started with Cry to Me, a Solomon Burke tune, and it just kind of flowed. I sang with the rhythm section live.
Did they give you the songs, or did you choose them?
I chose them. It was kind of like, "Hey, how you doing? How you doing?" And we all sat down. I went in the vocal booth, and they said, "What do you want to play first?" And I said, "How about Cry to Me?" And they said, "What key?" And I said, "I don't know, G, A flat, something like that." And they go, "Oh, yeah, some of us played on the original of that." And then...
Wow.
And then...
you got chills, and then you're like, "Okay, let me do this take."
Yeah, and then they were like, "What kind of tempo?" And then I did the tempo, and then I think we did one take of most of the songs and kept them. And then the horns came in, the Muscle Shoals horns, the next day. While we were recording the first day, Charlie Rose, who did all the arrangements, the horn arrangements, sat in the room.
Wow.
Listened and wrote the arrangements. Then he came in with the other cats the next day, And we did. We ended up doing 12 tunes. And then the next day the horns came in. Then the next day the background singers came in.
Dude, that's insane.
Yeah, it was crazy.
And is it going to be released?
It's released. It got released in September.
Dude, that's incredible. Yeah, thank you, man. You had to make a documentary just on that experience.
Man, you know, I wish I would have recorded more. It was, you know how you guys know how it is in the studio. You don't want to kill the vibe.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, I'm going in there with all these legends, and I didn't want to.
Right.
I was kind of minding my P's and Q's as far as that stuff goes, because it's a sensitive thing, and people play different when they're getting filmed.
Right.
You know, whether people will admit it or not.
Right.
You know, a lot of folks do. They'll play different.
That's true.
Yeah. So, and out of respect, I didn't really. I pulled out the phone a couple times, took some photos, but it wasn't really a situation where I felt like I could put that on them. Too much. Yeah.
That's amazing, though.
Yeah.
Muscle Shoals is like one of the most historic studios in the South.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just mention some of the albums that have Rolling Stones have recorded there.
Wilson Pickett, Rolling Stones, Aretha, Etta James, even Dylan did a recording there.
I think Duane Allman did a bunch of stuff there as well.
Yeah, Allman, Lynyrd Skynyrd, Arthur Alexander.
But the old souls, like the old soul 60s stuff and some of the 70s stuff, mm-hmm. is what they're famous for, because mm-hmm. they had cats that were just session musicians, and they all like lived really close to the studio, didn't they?
Yeah, they still do.
Wow, yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Amazing. Still right there. Amazing. Yeah. That's, dude, incredible.
Yeah, I brought you guys a copy.
I know, I'm stoked about this.
Yeah, man.
Thanks. What are you going to play us next? Let's play a lot.
I'll play a tune from this album.
Yes, please.
Yeah, let's play acoustic version of
it.
Of Otis Redding tune, That's How Strong My Love Is.
Oh, man.
If I was the sun way up there, I'd go with love most everywhere. I'll be the moon when the sun is gone, let you know I'm still around. That's how strong my love is, baby. That's how strong my love is. That's how strong my love is, honey. That's how strong my love is. I'll be the weeping willow drowning in my tears. You can go swimming when you are here. And I will be the rainbow after tears are gone. I will wrap you in my colors and I'll keep you warm. 'Cause that's how strong my love is. That's how strong my love is. That's how strong my love is. Love, that's how strong my love is. I'll be the ocean so deep and wide, catch all your tears whenever you cry. I'll be the breeze when the storm is gone, to dry your eyes and love you once more. That's how strong my love is. Ooh, and that's how strong my love is. That's how strong my love is. And that's how strong it is, how strong it is. Yes, it is. It's so strong. Oh, it's so strong. Yes, and that's how strong my love is. It's so strong. It's so strong. My love's so strong for you.
Yeah.
Dude, I love the applause.
You gotta have that. I mean, you know, like we hide our studio audience, but they're there.
Yeah, man.
You know, Chris, I gotta tell you, this is why we do this show, for artists like you. I mean, man, you inspire artists like me. even artists like Eddie, who is a comedian, but you know, you make us want to dig deeper.
Oh, right.
Because what you do, man. So thank you for doing what you do.
Thank you for having me.
Tell me what's up next for you. You're touring, you're doing some shows in town.
Yeah, I've got you know, one of my projects I do is called Reverend Tall Tree. And I actually just got through writing a blues opera called Reverend Tall Tree's Blues Opera.
That's awesome.
It's 21 songs with some a few monologues, and it tells the story of a 1930 street preacher going through the Deep South, and it's kind of an earthy show with humor, sorrow, murder, death, sex, and redemption eventually. And we're going to be doing three Tuesdays, the first three Tuesdays of February at Molly Malone's.
Wow.
And we're going to do the whole show. It's two acts, starting at 8 p.m. It's $10. And,
wait, so the show is a musical, or is it just all the live music?
It's a musical.
That's
yeah,
dope.
It's Reverend Tall Tree's blues opera. It's kind of like think Tommy, but 1930s and 40s blues.
That's,
you know,
awesome.
What I mean? Yeah. So I'm doing that. That's in early February, February 6th, 10th, or 6th, 13th, and 20th, February, all Tuesdays at Molly Malone's. But I'm getting ready to go on a little road tour next week doing my stuff. I'm going up to Napa. I'm doing a show in Napa next Friday. And then a little town called Oakhurst, which is right at the base of the gate of Yosemite. At a little place called Southgate Brewing Company.
That's awesome.
That's on Saturday the 20th. And then Friday the 19th, I'll be at a place called Jam Cellars in downtown Napa.
And you're still a workhorse, man.
Man, gotta do
I love it.
Man.
I mean, yeah. You know what? It makes me, I feel lazy, man.
Man, and this Thursday I'm playing at the Edison with Reverend Tall Tree downtown.
And tell me a little bit about this band. Did you put it together?
I put it together, man. It's
you
like,
just wanted to do something that was more rooted in blues?
Well, I wanted to challenge myself on the harmonica more, really, is why I started the band, because I had always played harmonica on like one or two songs.
Right.
But I had never really challenged myself to like learn a bunch of tunes on the harp, and I walked into a brand new club back in 2013. It just opened, called Sassafras Saloon on Vine Street, and the bartender said, "Hey, man, Chris Pierce. Yeah, I heard you play years back at this place." And I go, "Cool, man." I go, "What is this place, Sassafras Saloon?" He said, "Man, we're starting to have live music. What we're really looking for, what we're really fit this place is a blues band." And I said, I'll have one together for you in a week. And so I called three cats, Chris Lovejoy.
Yeah. Who's my percussionist.
Know. Yes, yeah.
He's your drummer.
Yeah.
One of my favorite people on the planet.
Mine too. A Dylan Cooper on the upright bass. And then I called Trevor Manier. And the band is rooted in blues. And it's evolved into things like the Reverend Tall Tree's Blues Opera.
Yeah.
We're now working with another guitar player, because Trev went off to play with a band called Dawes for a little while.
Yeah.
Sam Meek is playing with us, and he's excellent. It's just been a really cool thing, and I get to blow a lot of harp and play a lot of blues.
That's dope.
Kind of turned into a thing.
It's like a revival. That's what I like.
Yeah.
You're like, nah, who cares about pop? Let's do the real shit.
Man, yeah, it was really cool. You know, ADA put out the record a couple years ago and got some radio play. And, you know, kind of worked out to be a cool thing. We've done some blues festivals and it's fun.
And how did the name come about? You came up with this concept, this story?
Well, I've been an ordained minister since I was young. So that's where the Reverend comes from. And then Tall Tree, that name was given to me by a Native American elder at a sweat lodge I used to go to. And I started kind of spurting up in height over a few years, up to 6'5", what I'm currently. Actually, I probably am getting shorter because I'm getting so old, but that's what they say. But anyway, one day the cat says, "Man, you're growing like a tall tree," and it just kind of stuck. And
that's awesome.
Yeah, so the tall tree just kind of became like kind of a nickname for a little while. So Reverend Tall Tree.
And what was the inspiration for the whole storyline? Like, what made you want to do a blues opera?
You know, I got approached by a TV writer, Mark Malone, who who said, hey, I love your act. It's so emotional. It tells a story. How would you like to get together and, like, work on a stage play, like a musical, that we can dig more into the character of Reverend Talltree and kind of the roots of that, and, like, who would have Reverend Talltree been back in the day? So we got together. We started getting together once a month on Sundays. That was 3.5 years ago, and writing. And 21 songs later, and, you know, 20-something pages of script, we're finally done with it.
That's amazing.
Yeah, man.
Congrats, dude.
Thank you.
Oh, our studio audience loves it. Well, let's play something from the studio album. What do you want to play?
We got Cry to Me or Trouble Man.
I'm going to let you choose, Chris.
Man, Trouble Man feels good for the kind of weather we're having right now.
All right.
The vibe, yeah.
All right. Here we go. Trouble Man.
Bye.
come apart. Now I'm fine. I'm changed from sure. Hey, moving down.
Man, what a vibe, dude. Just man. Puts you right in it.
What's that?
Just puts you right in it.
Yeah, it does. It does, man. Just
right
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
You feel the room. You feel the vibe. You yeah. feel the era.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Thanks, man. Yeah.
You got to do like 10 albums with those guys, man.
Man, it was such an honor to be down there, man. And those cats were, they just put their heart and soul into, like they do everything they do, into this. And they're really cool.
Was it weird just like being thrown into a studio with a whole bunch of new musicians? Or you know, just feel like comfortable.
You know, I've been around so many different players and so many studios coming up. You know, it what you think might feel weird once that first note is played.
Right.
It always, and you know, and these guys, it always just feels right. But you know, or feels like you should be making music, even if it's you know something that isn't vibing. You know, you find the vibe, but. These guys, man, the minute I walked in, it was like, you know, my wife cooked some ribs, and they're up in the lunchroom if you're hungry, and we got this happening that. I mean, these are like, some down home yeah, cats that were like
stuff
all
right
about love, all about fellowship,
yeah,
you know, and it was just like I could feel it just walking in. And you know, I once you know the headphone levels were straight and everybody you know had the vibe. And we started playing. It was like okay.
I got an interesting question because this is just impromptu.
Mm-hmm.
You said the fellowship. Do you think that's lost on new artists today? You know that kind of family vibe. I mean, I know exactly what you're talking about, and I think for me, it frustrates me that it's not as warm of a scene as I think it was.
Well, I'd have to answer that with saying I think it's up to us whether it's lost or not, because I think the young artists need people to lead by example.
Dude,
you know,
it's like going to church even to talk to this guy, man. I love it. I got to give you and your band a shout out. I don't know if you ever remember this, but you and I did a show maybe 2003. It was the Mint. It was our like second or third show.
I remember that.
And my bass player, Ethan Phillips, at the time, his bass head fell off the amp in the middle of our second song. And we packed the room. You and I, there were like probably 300 people in the room.
Right.
And the head fell and just completely started making these crazy noises.
Yeah.
And your bass player, Orlando, who passed away
Sims,
a couple years ago.
God rest his soul, yes.
He didn't have to do this at all. He took his head and he put it on Ethan's his amp. And he said, man, use this for the rest of the gig. I've never forgotten that.
Yeah.
I thanked him one time outside of Cantor's.
Mm-hmm.
He forgot about it. And I was like, man, you did this for me. And it was like one of the most warm gestures. And I never have forgotten that, Chris. And, you know, there's going to be another show that you, myself, and I want to get David Ryan Harris, three of us, to do a bill.
Yeah.
Maybe at the El Rey or something.
Come
so
on.
It's coming, man. It's
come
coming.
On. Yeah, me, you,
because,
DRH, come on.
Yeah, man. I mean, that would be silly. That would be silly. But I never forgot that. And you continue to inspire. You've got some of the best songs of any artist that I know. People should buy your records. Tell people where they can find you and spell out your website because people are dumb.
Okay, my website is chrispierce.com. That's chrispierce.com. You can find my music anywhere you can find online music. You should be able to find me. Google me, type in Chris Pierce. If you can't afford some music, listen to me on YouTube. But if you can, please buy my album. It's how we survive.
That's right.
It's how we keep making albums. It's how we, you know, get gas to come up and do radio shows.
That's right. That's
so,
right.
You know, put a couple cups of Starbucks into buying an album that will last you a lifetime and inspire you.
Well said, man. And we'll end on that note. But Chris, I definitely want you to come back. You are such a tremendous artist, and more people should know about you.
Thank you.
I just always am inspired just being around you. So thank you for being a guest on our show.
It's my pleasure. Thank you both for having me.
Eddie, thank you for combing your hair tonight. Wait, you didn't.
No, I didn't. I don't comb my hair. It's radio.
But we'll see you guys next week. Chris, chrispierce.com. Check out his music now. We'll see you guys next week.